Hey, what's going on, fellow nature lovers, and welcome back to yet another episode of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast, where if you've listened to our podcast before, you already know that we enjoy discussing nature, sometimes about animals, sometimes we discuss plants, and sometimes we talk about concepts about nature, or even what's found out there in our beautiful, beautiful world. Hey folks, this is Tommy, and I am the audio digital host of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast. We are now into, believe it or not, season number 3 of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast. Now today is episode number 46, believe it or not, and I would like to discuss another one of our snake species. You know, I've already talked about the Eastern Garter Snake, and that was a really, really successful and popular episode. And we talked about the Northern Copperhead, which was also a very successful episode. So, on today's episode, I want to discuss the actually very beautiful, but quite venomous, timber rattlesnake, Crotalus horridus. Even the Latin name sounds a bit scary. Crotalus horridus, and I will further discuss the timber rattlesnake's taxonomy in just a few short minutes. Hey, welcome back, folks. You know, our podcast, The Amateur Naturalist, is now listened to worldwide in all of the 50 United States states. It's also listened to in 107 countries. 107 countries, and this is what gets me, an amazing 2,379 cities around the world, and that number just keeps on increasing. For some reason, I have just been totally stuck, I say it every week, on 107 countries for 5 months now. One of these days, we're going to hit 108 countries. Hey, folks, I wanted to say thank you to our brand new listeners in Newberry Park, California. Also, I want to say thank you to the folks that are listening brand new in Waco, Texas, Mar del Plata, Buenos Aires, and Maple Ridge, British Columbia, where we just picked up a few more listeners just even yesterday. Hey, folks, thank you. Thank you, thank you to all of our wonderful listeners. And now on to this week's episode. Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to episode number 46 of the Amateur Naturalist Podcast, where we delve into the fascinating world of wildlife and natural ecosystems with each and every podcast episode. So, what's going on today, listeners? You know, I am your audio digital host, and I got a good one for you today, folks. Today, we're going to discuss Crotalus horridus. Now, Crotalus horridus refers to the bandit rattlesnake, the canebrake rattlesnake, and, of course, the timber rattlesnake. Now, when I was in biology classes back at the University of Kentucky, and especially in my upper division herpetology classes, now, we spoke of the canebrake rattlesnake as a separate species. We actually had a live specimen of a, quote, canebrake rattlesnake, unquote, and then we had a timber rattlesnake in the same room. So, but most biologists today now look at the canebrake rattlesnake as being the same species as the timber rattlesnake. And most of the pictures you're going to see of the canebrake rattlesnake, I'm sure you've seen them, they have that dark yellow or maybe even an orange stripe, and it kind of runs right down almost the length of their entire middle of their dorsal part of the body. And when I refer to the dorsal part, if you don't know what I'm talking about, that's the top of the body. So if you'll picture a rattlesnake laying on the ground, right down the middle of that body, there's an orange stripe. Typically, that's what they would refer to as a canebrake, but lots and lots of timber rattlesnakes as well. So today, they recognize both, and it's not because of the stripe, but they recognize both snakes as being Crotalus horridus. Of course, I have seen timber rattlesnakes show that stripe as well. Most of the biologists gather these snakes under the same Crotalus horridus species name. Now, I've said it many times I live in Kentucky. And in Kentucky, where I live, we don't really have that many types of venomous snakes. You notice I'm not saying poisonous. A lot of fake people say poisonous, and that sounds right, but I want you to know, refer to it as venomous, and we'll talk about that a little later. In Kentucky, where I live, we have timber rattlesnakes. We also have the northern copperheads over much of the state, and we do have a small population of the pygmy rattlesnakes, and we have the cottonmouth. Now, a lot of folks think all over the state we have these cottonmouths, and you're going to get mad at me here, and you're going to yell back, but we don't typically ever have cottonmouths anywhere except the very, very far western reaches of the state of Kentucky. Now, hold on just a minute. Wait just a minute before we get too far into the discussion. You know, if you're a regular listener to this podcast, you know that if I am talking about an animal, or if I'm talking about a plant, or even a mushroom, I always, always like to first discuss that particular species, little drum roll, biological classification, or the species taxonomy. So here we go, folks. The timber rattlesnake is in the kingdom Animalia. Of course, right? It's also in the phylum, and if you know anything about biology, of course, it's in Chordata. It's in the class Reptilia. It's in the order Squamata, the suborder Serpentines, the family Viriparidae, the genus Crotalus, and another drum roll, folks, the species Crotalus horridus. Now, folks, that's the genus and the species name of our timber rattlesnake. Now, if you take a look at the map of the entire United States, you're going to see that Crotalus horridus covers roughly half of the United States, and basically it's not out west. So from basically the very far north, from about Vermont all the way down to northern Florida, not deep into Florida, but northern Florida, and from the far east coast all the way to just over the Mississippi River, and then all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico, we see populations of timber rattlesnakes, once again, Crotalus horridus. Now, the very famous Swedish naturalist, Carl Linnaeus, now he first described the timber rattlesnake way back in the year 1758 as, of course, Crotalus horridus. In the South, once again, many folks will have changed the name a little bit, and they call this snake the canebrake rattlesnake. Now in Kentucky, if we're just strictly talking about rattlesnakes, we only have a couple of species of rattlesnakes that include, number one, the timber rattlesnake, and then number two, the pygmy rattlesnake. A real, real pretty little rattlesnake, the pygmy rattlesnake. But there are several other rattlesnakes all across the United States. But in the South, we see those big, venomous eastern diamondback rattlesnakes in several states, such as on the eastern side of South Carolina. Believe it or not, they'll be right there on the beach, or sometimes even swimming in the Atlantic Ocean. Believe it or not, I've seen pictures. You'll see them in the dunes. You know, you're out there on the beach and you got that little bridge that goes across the dunes, and you might see a sign off to either side. Don't walk through the dunes, one, so you don't destroy the dunes, two, because a lot of times there's rattlesnakes such as the eastern diamondback rattlesnake in those dunes. But you'll see them in South Carolina. You'll see them down in southern Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, and in North Carolina and all over Florida as well. So don't want you to get confused when you see some pictures in those states of eastern diamond rattlesnakes. They look a little bit different. They've got that diamond pattern, of course, across their back, and they look a little bit different, a little bigger, a little more venomous, so a little bit more dangerous. So just know that in some areas, those timber rattlesnakes and eastern diamond rattlesnakes cross territories. But when you think of rattlesnakes across the United States, there are a bunch. So out west, you know, we have the Mojave rattlesnake. the Western Diamondback Rattlesnake, one of our most venomous, and we have the Baja California variety, the Prairie variety, the Eastern Massasauga, and folks, I'll tell you a little story here in a minute about a Massasauga who struck right at my face. More about that story in a few minutes. Now, we also have a Santa Catalina variety of rattlesnake, and you've all seen those cowboy movies, and you've seen them out there on the desert, and those sidewinders going across the desert. Real pretty snake, making that real cool sidewinder pattern across the sand. Now, timber rattlesnakes, they're kind of thick, and they're noted for that really conspicuous rattle back there on their tail tip, and the color of their back can be different colors. They don't all look the same. There's different variations in color, we should say. So they could be anywhere from like a gray, a light gray, a dark gray, even yellow. Some of them are really, really pretty, the yellow ones. Brown. They can be black. I mean dark jet black. They can be partially black. Or they can even be green. And you don't see a lot of the green ones, but most of our Kentucky timber rattlesnakes, they're decorated with those real distinctive dark crossbands. We might call those chevrons, you know, like you look at a Marine with those chevrons on their shoulder patches. So picture those chevrons, and then next time you look at a picture of a rattlesnake, you'll know what I'm talking about with those chevrons going across the timber rattlesnake's back. Now, if they're really black or really dark in color, the rattlesnakes, you won't usually see those chevrons across the back. Now, however, some timber rattlesnakes are completely black. In fact, some of these snakes are black over most of their last one-third of their body, and a lot of folks have come up with a really unique name for that. So I want you to picture like a snake, let's say he's 40 inches long, and the last one-third of his body, he's got that normal timber rattlesnake chevron look, and then the last one-third is just black. And maybe you see a little bit different very end of the tail where the rattle is. Folks have looked at that, and that black is so black it looks like velvet, so a lot of folks will refer to them as velvet tails. They'll say, yeah, I saw a couple velvet tails out when I was hiking today. And they're referring to, you're thinking, what in the world? But what they're referring to is seeing a timber rattlesnake. They look so black that got that little bit of a shine to them. They look like velvet, really soft velvet. So a lot of people are really, really afraid of snakes, right? In general, they're just typically really afraid of snakes, and especially, of course, rattlesnakes. I know in particular, have been hiking in areas and walking along a trail, and well off to my left side, I can remember hearing a rattlesnake rattling, and it will make the hair stand up on your back because you are immediately scoping the ground and looking around and saying, where is that snake? Because whether you're scared or not, you don't want to step on it, right? So you are looking around everywhere trying to figure out where it's at. So, but I'm going to be honest, they are so beautiful. They're a really, really pretty snake, but I'm scared of them too. Like I'm out in the woods. I'm where I have hiked and hunted and done a lot of things outdoors way back in the past. There have been lots of rattlesnakes, and for some reason, everybody seems to see them but me. So I just haven't seen a lot of them, but I have seen them. So we did talk about the rattlesnakes being referred as velvet tails. I think that's a really, really cool nickname, and you'll see that across the South quite a bit. Let's talk about the belly of the snakes. Not a lot of you are going to see the belly, right? We're not going to be holding the snake. It's probably not going to turn over and want us to scratch its belly. But where you might see that is in a zoo, or you might see it as they coil and they kind of flip or move. Or you might see them when they're dead on a road. And I have stopped and seen a few of them dead on the road and seen this. But the belly of many of the rattlesnakes, it's really light in color and it's very distinctive. They'll have black dots. So timber rattlesnakes, they also have these what we call really keeled, K-E-E-L-E-D, keeled scales. Kind of you picture the scale. If you got down and really, really looked, you'll see like a little line right down the middle of the scale. So we call that a keeled scale. They also have something you're probably never going to see either, and that is a single anal plate. What? What'd he say? It's a single anal plate. So that's a very distinctive trait with snakes. So a lot of times they look at those to see if it has a double or a single, and that really lets you know what we're looking at. Don't forget about those pits, right? Not the armpits. Snakes don't have arms, but those facial pits. What are those? So facial pits, most of us have seen those before in close-up pictures or in videos or even those really cool animal documentaries. So timber rattlesnakes just happen to be. I talk a lot about Kentucky because I live in Kentucky, but don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. We have rattlesnakes all over the South and in the North. I do talk about Kentucky some because I live here. But they are the largest venomous snake in our state of Kentucky. And for example, adult timber rattlesnakes, folks, they can reach up to 5 feet in total length. Although most of the adults are going to range anywhere from about 2.5 feet, not really big, up to about 3.5 feet. That's about average. All right. So you see some pictures where people are holding a snake on a stick way out in front of them, you know, and it, oh my God, it looks like it's 8 feet long. 99.9% of the time, that's a long stick sticking way out there towards the camera lens. So you call that perception photography, right? So just be careful with what you believe out there on Facebook and the internet. Most of them average about 2.5 to 3 feet. There are some that get up to about 5 feet in length. So we did talk a little bit about the range of rattlesnakes, you know, all the way up to Vermont, all the way down to northern Florida, all the way from the East Coast, all the way over to a little bit past the Mississippi River, and then all the way down to the Gulf and to Texas, right? Gulf of Mexico. So, but let's talk a little bit more about the habitat as well as the range. So again, in Kentucky, although once they were found all over the state, statewide, just everywhere, timber rattlesnakes now are currently restricted to like real heavily forested areas in Kentucky. So as we have come in and cut down all the habitat and cut down all the forest and made all these great looking farms for horses and great looking farms for corn and tobacco, as we do that, we start to diminish those really nice habitats that were for a lot of the animals, including timber rattlesnakes. Plus, what do you do? What do farmers do when they see a timber rattlesnake? Well, I would say 9 times out of 10, they're going to be a little scared, and they're going to say, I better take care of that. That's a problem, and that problem needs to be killed. And they're going to pull out a shovel, and you know what they're going to do. So, or they're going to run over it with their tractor, run over it with their lawnmower, what have you. So, you know, I get it. If you got kids and they're in your yard, you're worried, right? I do want to tell you, I hadn't planned on talking about this, but I do want to tell you, there are companies out there, there are agencies out there, there are snake relocators out there that you can pick up the phone. Maybe if you live in an area where there are these types of snakes, write the numbers down and put them somewhere where you'll know where it is, in the garage where your John Deere tractor is. But keep it somewhere so that when you do see a rattlesnake or a snake that otherwise you would just kill, give these folks a call. That's what they do. They will come out and they will capture the snake and they will take it to an area where it can live, because they are truly, 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 I'm not just saying it as a naturalist, they are very, very beneficial. They are here for a reason, and we have killed a ton of rattlesnakes, right? So populations today, because we've cleared so much in the inner bluegrass, they're really not known to occur in the inner bluegrass region anymore. We don't see them in northern Kentucky much anymore. And in addition to forest, these very secretive animals, they prefer like rocky outcrops. So I know on one of the farms that I frequented a lot for like the last 50 plus years, there's a spot or two where you can go way, way, way up on the top of a, say, an 1,100 foot knob or a 1,000 foot knob. And you go up on there and there'll be these rocky outcrops. And I have heard the rattle of a rattlesnake a few times up there. And I know that the surveyors that come in and survey the land have seen several rattlesnakes as they're out there surveying and they're looking down at the ground constantly, right? So they see these snakes. In those areas, if you're going to be in those woods a lot, you probably need to wear some snake gaiters. And you can find those at any of the outdoor sporting goods stores. You know, somebody ought to sponsor me for that, right? But you can go to these outdoor sporting goods stores like Cabela's or Bass Pro Shops, any of those types of places, and they're going to sell snake gaiters. It's going to be kind of a thick gaiter that you put around the bottom portion of your leg, which protects your, sometimes your, even your foot, but it'll protect all the way up to like your knee from a, like a snake bite. So what else we got here? We talked about the rocky outcrops. I don't want to talk forget about ridgelines. A lot of times they like to sun on the top of these ridgelines and bluffs, and they especially, because of the sunning part of it and staying warm, they like to get up there on the south and the southwest facing slopes, is just because of the sun, right? They don't want to be over on that shady side, right? And get over the shady side. Gets a little cool in the morning, gets real cool in the evenings. In the early spring or late in the fall, gets really, really cool and slows them down a lot. So they like to be on those really south or southwest facing slopes. Now, once again, in Kentucky, timber rattlesnakes hibernate. They actually do, and they will hibernate individually in, like, stump holes. So a stump hole, what's that? So a tree falls over, and, you know, the stump kind of pulls up, and it makes all these little places where animals can get in there. Or sometimes they refer to stump holes as an actual stump where somebody's cut down a tree, and it's rotted and rotted and rotted, and they can get down in there. Maybe mammals before them have dug burrows. So a lot of times different snakes, especially like a timber rattlesnake, will take up an abandoned mammal burrow or even those rock crevices. So don't be reaching your hands back into any rock crevices, right? Could be a little bit dangerous back in there. So, folks, you know, the Amateur Naturalist Podcast, we always like to talk about natural history. So, you know what? How about next we talk about some natural history of the timber rattlesnakes? And I'll tell you, timber rattlesnakes really do have quite a unique natural history. So, females take a long time to mature sexually. So the female timber rattlesnakes, they can take up to a long 6 years just to reach maturity. So right there, you're thinking, there's another reason why there aren't a ton of rattlesnakes. If it takes each female 6 years to mature sexually, that's quite a long time. That's 5.5 years or so where they're not having any babies at all. The live. Now, they don't lay eggs. A lot of folks think they lay eggs. The live young are actually born in the late summer or sometimes in the early fall. And the females generally have babies not even every year. So another determining factor why rattlesnakes are hard to get populated back if we are taking away habitat and we're killing every single one we see. You know what it is. Like out in the country, folks see a snake, any snake, doesn't matter what kind of snake, right? Doesn't matter what kind of snake it is at all, especially if they think it's a rattlesnake. And if it's crossing the road or if it's on a cold morning and it decided to lay on the hot road, because it's a reptile, folks see that snake, and what do? They hit the gas, run that pickup truck right over top of that snake, or they stop and they spin their tires, and they kill it right there. So right there's another reason we're losing a lot of rattlesnakes. Takes a long time for the females to reach maturity, 6 years. They don't have babies every year. They only have them every 2 to 3 years. There's another determining factor why we don't have so many. Now let's talk about the newborns. The newborn baby, little timber rattlesnakes, now they often will stay with the mother for several weeks after birth, right? And timber rattlesnakes, boy, they can live a long life, I tell you. I mean, you know, typically speaking, 25 years is a long time out in the wild. In a glass, big glass 35, 50 gallon fish tank in a lab or something, they live even longer. So timber rattlesnakes, they can live 25 or more years out in the wild. So snakes have been tagged, and they've been charted, and we do know how long they can actually live. So because of their late maturing and that very infrequent reproduction, their life history strategy really makes them incredibly, incredibly susceptible to human persecution and habitat destruction. All right, folks, we're back, and I want to talk, just to throw a few notes in there. You know, you don't usually see timber rattlesnakes in like a subdivision. You don't a lot of times see them on cleared horse farms, and I'm just saying on average. But timber rattlesnakes, really, when you think about it, they are a true sign of like the wilderness. You know, the Knobs area of Kentucky, the Appalachian Mountains, the Smoky Mountains, you know, real true signs of wilderness, right? Land between the lakes, places where people may frequent, but there are a lot of places to hide and live, and there's a lot of habitat and a lot of food. So in Kentucky, these very secretive, and you're not going to like this when I say this, but this is true, these very non-aggressive animals most frequently occur in areas with lower human population densities, and that's why we say they typically are a true sign of wilderness. And just because of their rarity alone, timber rattlesnakes are considered right now they're considered a, quote, species of greatest conservation need, unquote. And that is by a lot of the Department of Fish and Wildlife Resource agencies, including the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources. So they have now designated them in our state as a species of greatest conservation need. So to watch out for them, to protect them some, not to kill every single one we see. To if we have one in the locality and we can safely get out our cell phone and call that number that we saved earlier, you can call and say, hey, I got a rattlesnake out here on my property, and can you come out and relocate it? That would be awesome if we could do things like that. So, keeping on going with that theme, a lot of folks talk about these really, really huge timber rattlesnakes that they see out in the wild, right? And you've seen the pictures. I've seen the pictures. You know how somebody catches a largemouth bass? It's about a 3-pound bass, but they put their finger in its lip and they stick their arm straight out. And then their buddy's got their phone and they take a picture of this fish. And because their arm is so far out there, it looks like this 3-pound bass is now a 9-pound bass. Well, folks, of course, do the same thing with snakes. They will kill a rattlesnake and they'll pick it up with a stick and they'll report out, good Lord, look at this 8-foot dangerous, venomous timber rattlesnake we found on somebody's farm down the road. So that's anything about it. I get it. You know, you want to brag a little bit, but they take that picture of that dead rattlesnake hanging out there on that long, long stick. And we already talked about it. A really big one is around 5 feet long. So just think about that for a minute. Because of the particular perspective, when they do that, the snake looks really fat and incredibly long. And they do get pretty big. I mean, I have seen some really fat ones. A lot of the ones living in the forest, they're out there eating not just mice, not just voles. They're eating young rabbits, and they're also eating gray squirrels. So they're eating some pretty big animals out there. So they are going to get pretty big. And while they are digesting one of those big animals, they look pretty dang fat, right? They look huge. So you see that, and you're like, wow, look how big that snake is. So adult timber rattlesnakes, they, again, we talked about, they grow about 3 to 5 feet in total length on average. Most adults are right smack in the middle of that measurement, around about the average length of 45 inches. So, folks, that's about it for this week. But I do want to tell you, I have been getting some emails from you guys, and I really, really appreciate the nice feedback and the 5 stars that you guys are giving me. That's just, golly, that's awesome, and it really does help out the podcast, and I appreciate it. I want to tell you about some emails I'm getting. A lot of folks like the this podcast to be around 30 to maybe 45 minutes, and I'm going to try to commit to being closer to the 30. Occasionally, we might want to go 40, but I think if I keep it to 30, you can listen to it on a drive to work. You can listen to it on the way back home or what have you. So today's podcast, we're already right at 30 minutes exactly, just a few seconds over. So I'm going to end the podcast today. There's a lot you can talk about on timber rattlesnakes, and I enjoy talking about them, quite honestly. So that's it, folks. We're going to call it a night. And if you like the Amateur Naturalist podcast tonight, we would love for you to subscribe. Give us a rating. I'd love a 5-star rating, folks. And leave the podcast a review. I love reading your reviews. Well, folks, thanks for listening to my podcast tonight, yet again tonight. And as always, I do sincerely appreciate all of you downloading and listening to the Amateur Naturalist podcast. Good night, everyone. And take care. Hey everyone, Tommy Fowler here. Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? I know I did, and I wasn't for sure exactly how to make a podcast or how to market it. And that is where Buzzsprout came in. Maybe you want a new fun hobby, or you just want to have a new side hustle to make a little bit of money. So far, it's been a super fun hobby to me. Personally, I did a lot of research looking for a podcast host site, and Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and even track the success of your own podcast. Hey guys, I only started in mid-August 2022, and already I am listened to in over 100 countries around the world. I am currently listened to on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and 18 other popular podcast sites. Now that is what Buzzsprout can help you do as well. Hey, you can start your own podcast with just a smartphone, your earphones, and your stories. You don't need a bunch of fancy equipment to start off. Hey, folks, let me get you started. Go to my podcast show notes. You're going to see my podcast website link and maybe one or two advertiser links. Look for the Buzzsprout link. Now, click on that link to go to Buzzsprout, and you are going to get a $20 credit if you sign up today for a paid plan. Plus, it helps me out to keep my podcast on the air, and I might be able to finally update some equipment. By joining today through the link down in my show notes, you're going to get a great-looking podcast website, awesome audio players that you can drop in other websites, and fantastic analytics to see just how you are performing worldwide. Join today over 100,000 podcasters and myself already using Buzzsprout and get your awesome message out to the world. Hey, don't forget, it's totally free to start off with Buzzsprout in the beginning, and it does not cost much to join their first paid plan. And if you join today and you sign up for an inexpensive paid plan by clicking on the link inside of my show notes, you're going to get $20 off, and you'll help me out a little bit at the Amateur Naturalist Podcast. Thanks, folks.